This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is It Was a Thing on TV. Total Red Man has ever
done something like this to me. It's a killer!
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the dregs of humanity.
Episode 155, submission number 046, Canine and Company. Canine and Company was an unsold pilot that aired on BBC One on December 28th, 1981.
And we're doing it live, folks.
We're doing it live! Come on!
We'll do it live!
Yeah, here we go. Here's the epic opening title sequence from Canine and Company, everybody. We need more shots of Liz Slayton running!
Damn right we do. You can never have too many shots of... Okay. Alright, one thing we've learned from the opening is you can never have too much Sarah Jane Smith B-roll.
No. And they show a lot of K-9 in the opening, too.
Yes. Because K-9 is, after all, a girl's best friend. But it's funny, because in the whole of Doctor Who, the classic run, not the current run that's been on the air since 2005, they've never shown Sarah Jane and K-9 together.
Yeah, because they were the two most popular companions of the Fourth Doctor's era. But Sarah Jane Smith, of course, was a holdover from the John Pertwee era, because she appeared first in his last season, came aboard in like his... first Tom Baker's first 2.5 seasons, and then you had Leela, and then soon after, you had K-9 join the show as a companion. And K-9 was so popular.
K-9 was the real. Still is, by the way.
Oh yeah, John Leeson's still doing K-9 today for Big Finish.
And I believe also did a couple of episodes for the current run, specifically School Reunion, which had K-9 and Sarah Jane in a Doctor Who episode for the first time with David Tennant.
Yes, which, of course, is a direct sequel to what we're about to cover. But, this opening. Oh, there's just...
It's very retro, but then again, so is K-9.
So is K-9.
But it seems like Sarah Jane Smith is the only one who actually... grew up, let's say.
Yeah.
Because, yes, we all know that she's a genius and that she likes to A, start junk, B, get into junk, and C, get out of junk.
Well, she is a journalist. She goes after the scoop.
She does. She is all about the tea, let me tell you. And again, Elizabeth Sladen as Sarah Jane Smith, as good as ever. Like you said, Greg, one or two of the most popular companions of the Doctor. Again, rest in peace, Elizabeth Sladen.
Oh, yeah.
So how did Sarah Jane find K-9?
That's an interesting question because, as we said, they never met each other on the show.
Well, nobody told John Nathan Turner that. Of course, John Nathan Turner being the producer of Doctor Who at a time, and had a real good mind for the franchise. And he really wanted Sarah Jane back of the TARDIS.
Oh, who can blame him?
Yep. But she never did get back into the TARDIS until, of course, the school reunion show. And, well, let's just say she never left.
Yeah.
Yeah, she would pretty much play that role up until her passing. Again, rest in peace, Elizabeth Sladen. John Nathan Turner wanted Elizabeth Sladen back on Doctor Who, but she did not really have an interest in returning to the role. Of course, her place in things went to Janet Fielding, who we all know as Tegan Jovanka.
Oh, yes. And Tegan, another legendary companion.
Yes.
Braveheart Tegan.
I have to imagine that if Greg and I are going to do a Presents episode, it'll be the top 10 Doctor Who companions.
It will definitely be the top
10. And what, we are getting close to the 60th anniversary of the franchise, aren't we?
Never 2.5 years. Feels like just yesterday it was the 50th anniversary.
I know.
Well, remember, Doctor Who premiered the day that JFK died.
No, day after.
Well, yeah. Okay, the day after.
Not that day after.
But still, right in that area. So November 24th of 2023 will be the 60th anniversary.
Yeah, and I imagine we're going to have to do like a top 20 companions. And just to appease to Mike, Bradley Walsh will make the list somehow.
Oh, shut up. the thing is, I could probably guess like 7 or 8 of Greg's favorites.
All right. Obviously, you know Amy Pond's going to be one.
Oh, of course Amy Pond's going to be one.
Okay. Captain Jack. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Sarah Jane Smith.
Yeah.
Ace. Sophie Aldridge.
Oh, Ace, of course.
Yeah.
Of course, Ace was in the pinball game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which we'll cover in June in It Had a Pinball Machine.
Yeah, damn right we're going to talk about Doctor Who, the pinball machine. I could talk about that all day.
And Star Trek. And Star Trek. TNG, I should say.
Oh, we could talk about many games.
Yeah, well, Star Trek has 4 pinball games, so we'll definitely be talking about each one of them.
Yep.
That's for later.
The number one has to be the Brigadier. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Even though he's not really a companion, he's kind of like the Doctor's sort of bud. Although he's not real. Oh, you wouldn't say a bud, but he's kind of like
his compagnier. Compagnier. Are we using classy words now?
Yeah, Amy Pond is like number one on my list. So thank you for checking that off, Greg.
Yeah.
No problem.
By the way, in case it wasn't clear, I really heart Karen Gillan.
Anywho, John Nathan Turner wanted, because we're transitioning from Tom Baker to Peter Davison, to have Sarah Jane Smith be along from Legopolis to the second story of season 19.
Which would be 4 to Doomsday.
Yeah, that was like when I started watching. When I was a little chico.
Oh, yeah. That scene where the Fifth Doctor is with like that helmet on and he's out in space, like in a spacewalk. Mm-hmm. Great stuff.
But it didn't happen. And she had no qualms about it. So, but that didn't stop John Nathan Turner wanting to do something outside of Doctor Who proper series. And that would lead him to the Tin Dog. Because, again, he was really popular, but he was really hard to deal with.
Yeah, because it's a robot. I mean, we talked about the chameleon on Doctor Who.
Oh, God, we're going to talk about chameleon again.
But, I mean, this was a full-size robot.
That's a robot who's playing a robot who isn't a robot.
Well, that's right, he isn't a robot, but still.
So, a pilot was commissioned by the BBC for K-9, but K-9 would still need a companion, because K-9 would be the lead, and the companion would be the companion. And it wouldn't be like Doctor Who highbrow drama. It would be something along the lines of what we would see later on the CBBC series, The Sarah Jane Adventures. We'll get into that later. So, John Nathan Turner, again, wanted, as the human lead, Liz Sladen. And the pitch was, okay, this is not going to be like anything we've done with Doctor Who at all. Yes, you would be Sarah Jane Smith, but you would not be playing against the Doctor. This would be your show. This would be your baby. Elizabeth Sladen said yes. And so we have Sarah Jane Smith, the intrepid reporter, and we have K-9, the tin dog. So what kind of antics do we put these two in? Well, they first have to get together, so...
Yeah, well, they have to first meet.
Yes. And that would happen at the home of her Aunt Lavinia. Now, if you're a fan of Doctor Who, you know she frequently mentions her Aunt Lavinia, but we've never seen Aunt Lavinia.
No, we've never saw her in any of the episodes she was in.
Nope. She would be played by Mary Wimbush, who was in such legendary shows like Poldark, Jeeves and Wooster, and The Archers until she died in 2005.
All the classics.
All the classics, yes. I don't think she made any appearances on our side of the pond. No. But she was in Jeeves and Wooster with Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie. So that's something.
Yeah.
So Aunt Lavinia left early for a lecture tour in America. Really? Her ward, Brendan Richards, is still in the house, though. And Brendan Richards is played by Ian Sears, who doesn't really have a Wikipedia page.
I don't think he's related to the Sears department chain.
No, he's not.
Okay.
And frankly, he's been... No, he hasn't been in much of it. He hasn't been in much of anything, has he?
No.
Nope.
This is one shining moment.
Oh, wait, no. He played David in Yentl.
Oh, okay. So that's his one shining moment. He was in a movie with Barbara Streisand.
He also played Dean Martin in televised bio South of the Border. But like 9 out of every 10 British actors, he was on the bill.
I don't know what that means.
The bill, that British cop drama.
Oh.
Y'all know what the bill is. Anyway.
I've heard of it, yeah.
So after picking up Brendan Richards, they return to Aunt Lavinia's house, and they find a large crate. And inside the large crate, it's K-9! And K-9 introduces himself as a gift from the Doctor.
Where are you from, K-9?
From the Doctor.
From the Doctor?
Affirmative.
Oh, you can't mean the Doctor.
My precise meaning, Mistress, a gift to you.
Oh, Doctor, you didn't forget.
And we presume it's the fourth Doctor.
Well, almost has to be, because A, look at his collar, and B, again, if you've seen the opening on YouTube before, you notice that his collar sort of has this nice little pattern that's reminiscent of the fourth Doctor.
Yeah, and they did mention that he was dropped off in 1978 because the package was stuck in Sarah Jane's aunt's attic for years.
Yes. So we're left to assume that it is indeed the fourth Doctor. Because I don't think the fifth Doctor messed with K-9.
No.
Nope.
Although I could see him being very debonair and saying, you know what, I haven't seen Sarah Jane in a while. You know what, I'll leave a present.
Well,
he'd do that, yeah.
Yeah, he totally
Peter Davison's totally the type that would leave a nice present for somebody.
Oh, he is so nice.
But we could definitely eliminate any fact that possibly Colin Baker, the sixth Doctor, left it.
Screw that guy.
Thank you. Okay, that's all I wanted to hear.
Oh, come on.
That's my contribution to this episode. Colin Baker sucks. Kiss my ass.
Boo this man!
All right, so now Brendan is very curious about this tin dog, and to a lesser extent, so is Sarah Jane. Remember, Sarah Jane, K-9 have never been in the same room before. But still, she can't really get past the fact that her Aunt Lavinia is missing. So Sarah Jane, being this intrepid young reporter, goes into town to question the locals about where Lavinia is. And Brendan is left to take care of the tin dog. So Sarah eventually discovers that Lavinia was actually disliked by some because of her blunt letters to the local newspaper editors about a growing practice of witchcraft in the area. I wish I was joking. Meanwhile, Brendan asks K9 to analyze soil samples in the garden. And while he's doing that, he is attacked by a couple of ruffians, George Tracy and his son Peter. George Tracy, played by Colin Jeavons, who is a retired British actor now. What's he known for playing? He played Uriah Heep in the 1966 production of David Copperfield. Ooh. And he was in like 9 out of every 10 British actors. He too was on Doctor Who. An Underwater Menace.
Oh yes, Underwater Menace, where it contains two of the earliest surviving Patrick Troughton episodes from his era of Doctor Who.
Yes. And his son, Peter, played by Sean Chapman, who is known as... He played Frank Cotton in Hellraiser and Hellbound Hellraiser 2. By the way, Hellraiser, really good movie. But mostly he did theater work. Now, George and Tracy are tied to a local coven while we're on witches. George Tracy flees before Brendan can get a good look at him. K9 uses his laser to stun Peter before setting off in pursuit of George. Brendan, because he wants answers too, talks to Peter about what's going on with these witches and where's Lavinia.
Yeah, what's going on with all these witches in these parts?
But Peter escapes when Brendan goes to investigate a crashing sound, which turns out to be the accidental destruction of a greenhouse by K9.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't be destroying those greenhouses, K9.
Yeah, it gets worse. The guy he was chasing, George Tracy, he wants to know where Lavinia is, too.
Oh.
Because he's Lavinia's gardener. So now he's going to look around the greenhouse to see what sort of mess K9 made. And after Brendan attempts to brag about the pH balance of the soil, Tracy says, "Hey, listen, gardening is more about respect for nature than scientific theory, okay? Which is totally something a witch would say, am I right?"
Yeah.
Otherwise, he doesn't betray his more sinister intent towards Brendan, and later that night, he sends Peter out to kidnap Brendan from the house. Oh, no.
Oh.
This is where you would put Susan St. Jean saying,
"Uh-oh!
Uh-oh! Uh-oh!" We're gonna get so much mileage out of that club. Uh-oh!
Yeah. Now, Brendan is successfully kidnapped by Peter, stealing him out from under Sarah, who is elsewhere in the house, reading up on witchcraft. You know, at times like this, you could just give the whole book to K9 and he could pick it up with no problem in seconds. Am I right?
Yeah.
So Brendan's kidnapped, Sarah Jane is reading up on witchcraft, and George is wondering, what on earth is going on here? Sarah Jane is now suspicious about the Tracys, thinking they would have the opportunity to commit any crime that they can think of, even if she can't put her finger on why.
Hmm.
So, what's a girl to do?
Yeah, what is a girl like Sarah Jane Smith supposed to do?
Hide the tin dog in his house.
Well, that makes sense. Just hide this robotic metal dog.
Just tell him it's a toy.
Yeah, a toy. It's 1981.
It's 1981. They were making robots out of everything. They get him in the house, have him sort of monitor things, and come back with any evidence. K9 quietly does that, and then he listens in on a conversation that implicates Tracy as a member of the coven. He also discovers Tracy intends to kill Brendan in an act of ritual murder.
Oh no! Don't tell me they're gonna have a blood orgy!
Something like that.
Blood orgy! Yay! Blood orgy! Blood orgy! Yay!
Tracy leaves his house. Sarah Jane's able to pick up K-9, who... I have news, mistress! Tracy is going to kill Brendan! Now, she can't go to the police with all of this because, A, who's going to believe that George Tracy is a warlock? B, who's going to believe Sarah Jane has a super intelligent talking robot dog? And C, who's going to believe that anybody wants to kill Brendan? Anybody? Anybody want to believe any of this stuff?
No, no one's going to believe this.
No, nobody?
No one's going to believe this at all.
Oh, boy. Okay, so, of course, she's got to get down to the bottom of things herself. And I have the quote here from Truth by Consensus Wikipedia. She has no way to enlist the aid of the local police or really anyone else in the town because she can't substantiate her claim of overhearing the conversation without also then having to explain who and what the anachronistic K-9 actually is.
Oh, yeah. She can't explain to the police. Oh, yeah, I was in a time machine with this guy in a long scarf. And he also, eventually, after I left, had this robotic tin dog that was on his spaceship that's bigger on the inside than the outside. And then he decided, I'm going to leave this dog as a present.
Yeah, they're going to look at this girl and say, my child, you've been touched in the head. It's all true! Okay, so basically this pretty much puts Sarah Jane and K-9 on their own, trying to save the day. Which, this is basically the genesis of every great Doctor Who story. Okay, we cannot go to the authorities because we can't trust them or they're gonna think we're crazy.
Yeah.
Or perhaps both. It's both.
It's both.
So, they have to save Brendan, stop the sacrifice, and find some way to implicate George and or Peter. Oh yeah, and they still have to figure out the whole Aunt Lavinia thing.
Yeah.
Because we still haven't touched on that yet. First thing she does is try to figure out when it's happening. Using Aunt Lavinia's books on witchcraft, they deduce it must occur at midnight on the winter solstice. Now just a few short hours away. So, first day of winter at midnight. Which doesn't really make sense, at least from an astronomical standpoint, because, you know, this sort of thing, it reads to me, at least, that it has to happen just as the sun is above its apex in the southern hemisphere.
Yeah, I bet you Neil deGrasse Tyson had major problems with this episode.
I think so. So they just wrote, hey, you know what? Let's just make it midnight. It's easy to understand.
Yeah. Simple. Everyone knows what midnight is.
But, okay, they figured out when. Now they have to figure out where. So they're basically looking at every church within a radius. At the last possible moment, they find... Wait a minute. It's an abandoned church on Lavinia's property.
Oh!
It's literally in the last place they look.
The last possible place they would have expected.
So they rush home, basically kicking themselves, thinking, how can we miss it? It's been under our noses this whole time. And they arrive just in time in order for K-9 to dispense laser justice.
Laser justice! He's shooting red lines out of his nose.
Hey, those are powerful random lines, man.
Powerful random lines that look crudely optically put in.
It's the BBC in 1981. What do you want?
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't Space 1999, where it's like an uninterrupted laser effect, and then you stop camera for like 5 seconds, and then fall over, right?
Yeah.
The priest and priestess were stopped from plunging a knife into Brendan's chest, and now that they're stunned, the ringleaders are easily apprehended by the police, who I'm pretty sure got a good look at that robot dog and thought, well, that's a nice toy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a nice robotic toy for 1981.
So we're all left to celebrate the holidays, because, again, this would be 3 days after Christmas, and of course, anyone who knows Doctor Who knows that Doctor Who takes its Christmases very seriously. And who does Sarah Jane get a call from? Her Aunt Lavinia.
Oh!
Who, as it would turn out, is actually on a lecture tour in America.
Oh, okay. So she actually was in a lecture tour in America. She wasn't kidnapped or anything.
No.
Oh, good.
But she was surprised that Sarah Jane was worried, because she left instructions for her business partner to send Sarah Jane a wire. And as he turns out to be the high priest of the coven, Sarah Jane never got it.
Oh.
Makes sense now, doesn't it? Everything's all connected.
Now this everything has come together. It all makes so much sense.
Yep, and the episode ends with K-9 teaching himself to sing, "We Wish You a Merry Christmas."
You wish we a merry, reject. We wish you a merry Christmas. We wish you a merry Christmas and a happy new year.
And that is the story of K-9 and Company, which is actually a very solid bit of storytelling. You have a bunch of characters, you have intrigue, everything coming together at the end. So that leads me to ask, what went wrong? Because it had every sort of hallmark of a new hit for the BBC. It had more viewers than a standard Doctor Who episode, for one. And it had some solid storytelling, and it had very likable characters.
Yes.
So what went wrong? Well, this is pretty much a case of reality writing the script, because this was at a time when the BBC was exchanging hands. Bill Cotton, who was the previous controller of the BBC, had commissioned the pilot, but since it had aired, Alan Hart was the new commissioner, and he basically didn't like the idea to begin with.
Yeah, this is in the days before the BBC treated Doctor Who like one of the prestige shows at the BBC.
Yeah, right now the BBC has 3 super brands that they pretty much devote their entire programming, well, a great majority of their programming budget around. Those, of course, being Doctor Who, Strictly, and Top Gear. Of course, you know, Strictly airing in the US as Dancing with the Stars. But, yeah, I guess in 1981, Alan Hart just didn't see a place in the canon for K-9 and Company, even though the people behind Doctor Who would treat this pilot as a canon.
Yes. In fact, in the 20th anniversary special of The Five Doctors, when we first see Sarah Jane Smith, she's with K-9. At the start of The Five Doctors.
Mistress, do not go out.
Christmas.
Danger, mistress.
What?
I can sense danger, mistress. Telepathic trace, faint but rapidly increasing in strength. Do not go out.
What kind of danger?
Positive data, not yet available.
But I can't stay home. You have to give me a reason.
Negative, mistress. Data analysis shows too many variables. Danger readings now becoming much higher, mistress. Suggestion. Take me with you.
I can't. Honestly, I can't. The car's in dock, so I've got to go by bus.
There is danger, mistress.
My sensors indicate it is now extreme. And the doctor is involved.
Well, now I know you're imagining things. See you later.
Danger! Doctor! Danger! Mistress!
Yep, and again, if you were not one of the people who watched the pilot, you would totally misunderstand that until you asked somebody who saw the pilot.
Of course, nobody would have gotten that those scenes with Tom Baker and Leo Ward were from Shada.
Right.
Unless you were, like, really smart and you knew there was, like, a Doctor Who serial in, like, 1979, 1980 that was never completed.
Pretty much. And, of course, the whole story with Sarah Jane was continued, and as we said before, in the second season episode from 2006, School Reunion, where Sarah Jane and K-9 were helping the Doctor and his companions at the time, Mickey and Rose. Well, let's just say that Sarah Jane was helping the Doctor and Rose, and K-9 was helping Mickey, because let's be honest, at this point, Mickey needs all the help he can get.
Oh yeah, Mickey is like, he doesn't know where his place is at this point in the show.
I'm the Tin Dog. And that episode was actually sort of a backdoor pilot of sorts, because K-9 would have sacrificed himself, and at the end of the episode, he would be replaced by K-9 Mark IV.
Yes.
And they would go on to feature in the more successful spinoff, The Sarah Jane Adventures.
Yes. But of course, K-9 was mostly absent from most of the series because he had that other show in Australia, right?
He had another show in Australia? What was that?
Yeah, he had his own show, K-9, in Australia. It was like K-9 Adventures or something.
Hmm.
You did not know this?
I was today years old when I learned K-9 Adventures. K-9 is a British-Australian science fiction adventures focusing on the adventures of the robot dog K-9. A single series was made in Brisbane, Australia, with co-production funding from Australia and the United Kingdom. It aired in 2009 and 2010 on Network 10 in Australia and on Disney XD in the UK, as well as being broadcast on other Disney XD channels in Europe. I love the tagline, "Who's a good dog?" And it did manage to air in the US on Sci-Fi from Christmas 2012. And it looks like John Leeson would reprise his role as the voice of the Tin Dog.
Yes.
Who looks very... That's a different sort of dog than...
Yeah.
They
wanted to probably have him differentiate from the previous K-9s. Because it's not a BBC production, so...
No, it's not a BBC production, but sort of, kind of...
It's kind of like, remember when we saw the clips of The Stranger?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is basically Doctor Who, but not.
Yeah, they basically... okay. All right, you know, you're right, this was not a BBC production, because Doctor Who ultimately is owned by the BBC... But this is the original one. This is the original K-9.
This is the original K-9 right here. K-9 and Company.
But wait a minute. I like this line. Again, this is from Wikipedia. The decision to launch the show in Australia on April 3rd, the launch date for Doctor Who's The 11th Hour, which introduced Matt Smith as the 11th Doctor, was interpreted by the Gawker Media blog IO9 as a way of taking advantage of the latter show's popularity to boost interest in the show. This show only lasted one season.
Oops.
Whereas Matt Smith lasted a good 4. But yeah, that's another story for another episode. But K-9 and Company, as solid as it was in Christmas of 81, It was just a thing on TV.
Yeah. Well, guys, K9 and Company, it was a thing on TV.
Yeah.
Mike, unfortunately, you couldn't get past the opening, but you missed out on something really fun.
I can believe it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We're going to have some fun right now, because get ready, guys. It's time to play eBay Price is Right!
Woo! Yay!
So you are bidding on a print. It is an Elizabeth Sladen K9, the Sarah Jane Adventures Doctor Who print. And I don't know if this is custom made or custom drawn, or if it's like an actual like drawing that was sold, but it looks pretty sweet.
Okay.
Yeah, so you have Sarah Jane, you have K9, in the background you have the Third Doctor, the Fourth Doctor, the Tenth Doctor, which were all the doctors that Sarah Jane Smith encountered. So you have, of course, John Pertwee, Tom Baker, and David Tennant in the print. By the way, since this episode's being released on our Podbean feed the day after it happened, happy belated 50th birthday to David Tennant. So, you are bidding on the opening bid of the print. Now, there's 2 days and 1 hour left in this auction at the time we're recording this, so you're bidding on the opening bid for this item, and I'm going to start with Mike.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Are there currently any bids?
No bids. That's why I said starting bid.
Okay, it has to be outrageously high then. I see it's autographed, if that means anything. I'll say $79.95.
Chico.
I was gonna go higher than that. Maybe $129.95.
Okay. All right, here we go, guys. The starting bid on the Elizabeth Sladen K9 Sarah Jane Adventures print. $100.
Wow.
It's nice.
It's a really good looking print. It really is.
It really is. We could hang it in our museum.
You could hang it in the museum right next to the autographed photo of Peter Marshall hosting All-Star Blitz.
You could put it right there, or you could just put it right in the background with the Superman balloon from the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Okay, I will say this, though. I don't think I've ever seen John Pertwee quite like that. But also, maybe it's just me, but does John Pertwee and or Tom Baker look drunk?
Maybe.
They don't look right, or at least one of them doesn't look right. and David Tennant's looking at, like, breaking the fourth wall, saying, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I brought these drunk doctors along with me.
I'm so sorry.
Well, Colin Baker was the Tony Shalhoub of Doctor Who.
He made that show. Did he make that show? Did that show make him?
What about
Colin
both?
Baker was the Tony Shalhoub of Doctor Who? Are you friggin' high?
Some insurance companies send you for 3 estimates on a fender bender.
Gonna need new bumper, gonna need new fender, gonna need new panel,
gonna need new panel, gonna need new bumper, gonna need new fender,
gonna need a new fender, gonna need a new panel, gonna need a new bumper.
Allstate Update. Claim service the easy way.
The good hands people won't send you shopping for estimates. One stop at any Allstate Claim Center can get you an estimate and a fair settlement. Right here. Without the runaround.
You're in good hands with Allstate.
This is NBC News Capsule, sponsored by Budweiser Light. Here is Jessica Savage.
Good evening. Treasury Secretary Donald Regan said today that America is on the threshold of recovery from recession. He added the third year of the tax cut must be preserved. In Beirut, the worst violence in months. One civilian and one Israeli soldier reported killed. More in a moment.
Discover the clean, distinctive taste of a light beer worthy of the king of beers.
Super Sunday's clear, but California may get another 3 inches of rain tomorrow and new storms later this week. Finally, the Super Bowl is not the only gala today. In New Orleans, they kicked off Carnival with a parade. One group did a dance called the Missile Dense Pack, where they all get together, they said, and, quote, become as vulnerable as possible. I'm Jessica Savage in New York. More news later on this NBC station.
NBC proudly presents Steve Martin's The Winds of Whoopee. His maddest moments plus new routines. See it all in 1 hour on February 6th.
It's WCW Tough Talking Wrestling. So smart they know who they're talking to.
Bring it on, Nash Goldberg. I dare you.
They're really talking to each other.
Goldberg, you're no match for the Stinger Splash.
They actually know each other's name.
Yo, yo, Jacko, don't turn your back on me, Nash.
No, he really knows it's Nash.
Tough Talking Wrestling even know who they're fighting.
My right arm will tear you in half. Nash, like to see you try.
They even know who they're pinning.
No one can beat the Stinger.
DDP. You, 12-inch WCW Tough Talking Wrestling, come in 2 packs. Batteries not included.
Calling collect. You've got options. You can dial zero like this guy.
Hi, Mommy. I rode on the plane all by myself.
Did I mention you'll be charged as much as you possibly can for this call?
Or
you can dial 1-800-COLLECT. Here's how it works. Dial 1-800-COLLECT. Yeah, I just saved you some cash. You're welcome. Love you. Called Mom Collect, huh? You know, you could have saved up to 44% by dialing 1-800-COLLECT.
Can you find it in your heart to forgive me?
Introducing the next generation from Nintendo, New Super Mario World, created especially for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. It's a bit more exciting, a bit more challenging, a bit more graphic, a bit more colorful, a bit more realistic, a bit more levels, a bit more secret, a bit more enemies, a bit more friends, a bit more sound, a bit hotter, a bit cooler, a bit weird, a bit more revolutionary, a bit more Mario, a bit more of what you want. It's 16-bit, and it's yours only if you get New Super Nintendo. Now you're playing with power, superpower.
Kelly LeBrock reveals the essence of man.
Hard to define. Easy to know. From the way he holds a drink, the way he wears his clothes, the way he talks, the way he walks, the way he smiles, looks, kisses, how many holds he calls, and the way he smells. Brute. The essence of man. Come on, put it on.
Dennis Fairley tells me that you people have something for me.
It's right here.
A deadly profession.
What?
A dangerous obsession.
Do you want to make love to me?
A fatal deception.
You killed that guy tonight, the senator.
It was a mistake. I thought I was hitting someone else.
Now he must risk his life to save the woman he loves.
You know you're a dead man.
We all are.
Robert Wagner, This Gun for Hire, a USA world premiere movie, Wednesday night at 9, 8 Central.
Episode 156, Submission 1240, the 1978 Science Fiction Film Awards. The 1978 Science Fiction Film Awards aired in syndication on January 20th, 1978.
Your hosts for the Science Fiction Film Awards, Karen Black and William Shatner.
Well, it's the Oscars, and in true It Was a Thing on TV fashion, we're not even bothering to cover a past Oscars, but we are covering something for award season,
and we
figured this is legendary, and we'll get to why in later, but 1977, the year before, which this award show is honoring, was the breakout year for science fiction.
Indeed, what we had,
yeah, it was.
Well, we had a small art house film that debuted that summer. You guys may have heard of it, a little something called Star Wars.
Oh yeah, or as people call it today, Star Wars Episode 4: A New Hope. Oh, by the way, I need to mention something. Mike?
Yeah?
Do you remember back when we covered the Star Wars Holiday Special, how I mentioned that George Lucas's original plan for a sequel in case Star Wars wasn't a hit was he was going to make a low-budget TV movie called Splinter of the Mind's Eye, and you were asking, hey, well, I don't know why it was, because in 1978, because Darth Vader was on To Tell the Truth, David Prowse. Okay, because I didn't explain the entire story, because we were so busy, we tried to get to Charles Stiles' Mystery Diner, so I didn't have time to explain it. Okay. On the opening weekend of Star Wars, George Lucas was in Hawaii with Steven Spielberg. And once he saw the opening box office numbers for Star Wars, he was like, okay, this movie's a hit. I don't have to worry about this low-budget sequel. Done. But also, fun fact, on that same trip to Hawaii with Steven Spielberg, they came up with what was the idea for
Raiders.
Yes, Raiders of the Lost Ark. And speaking of Steven Spielberg, he also had a big hit in 1977 of his own.
Yeah, he did.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Ooh. Oh, that was a good movie too.
That was a sci-fi banger in 1977.
Yeah, Richard Dreyfuss making the mashed potatoes.
When are you going to start taking things a little more seriously? I mean, you've been wandering aimlessly from job to job ever since I've known you. If you could just get that overactive imagination of yours to work for you instead of against you, maybe you could... What are you doing?
This means something. This is important.
Interesting you mentioned Close Encounters of the Third Kind, because that and Star Wars were actually up for the award for Best Science Fiction Film, along with Demon Seed, The Original Island of Dr. Moreau, and Twilight's Last Gleaming.
Yeah, nobody remembers those other three movies.
No. We're actually just saying these for, you know, completion's sake.
Yeah. So, Star Wars and Close Encounters, they were the big hits in the movies in 1977. They redefined the blockbuster. And so television, like they normally do, decides, you know what? We're going to get in on this craze. Hey, we got a great idea. This is normally the time of award season. So we're going to have science fiction awards live on television. And the beauty is, Chico, this award ceremony had already existed.
Oh, yeah. It existed in 1973 as what was originally referred to as the Golden Scrolls, but have since become the Saturn Awards.
Yes, the Saturn Awards, which have become the very top award, the elite award in science fiction.
And fantasy and horror. In fact, they are presented annually by the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films.
Yeah, so you got all the genres represented.
Yep, and nowadays you would be totally shocked if you didn't see a Saturn Awards where you'd have the cast and or crew of Star Trek Picard, The Walking Dead, and The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
But in 1977, you know, it was just, you know, sort of the genesis of what TV can do with science fiction when you have the Star Wars Holiday Special, and later on that year, a little show on ABC called Battlestar Galactica, and a little show on syndication called Space 1999 that was imported from the UK with Marty Landau and Barbara Bain.
That's
the second time this week I've referenced Space 1999. What is wrong with me?
And don't forget, around this time on PBS, they were airing episodes of this small little British show called Doctor Who.
Oh, yes. So science fiction on television was coming into a bit of a renaissance, because you remember back in the old days, you had the sort of days of Captain Video and his Video Rangers and whatnot.
And Commander Cody. And Flash Gordon.
So why are we talking about this particular iteration of the awards, aside from everything that's going on in the movies in 1977, we're getting there. But who was actually part of the fifth Saturn Awards show?
Well, hosting it, you have, okay, what name is bigger in the sci-fi world in 1978 than a show that was on NBC a decade earlier and then became a giant hit in syndication? I'm talking about Star Trek, and I'm talking about the man, the myth, the legend, William Effin Shatner.
No, of course he's gonna host because he's William Effin Shatner. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
And around this time, now we're gonna cover this in another future episode called It Almost Was a Thing on TV. But remember, Chico, at this time, they were planning Star Trek Phase 2.
For the long since stillborn Paramount Television service.
Yes. But because Star Wars was such a big hit at the box office, Paramount decided, you know what? We're going to forget about this Paramount Television service and this Star Trek series. We're going to make it into a feature film.
Yep. And in 1979, we get Star Trek, the motion picture.
Directed by Robert Wise.
Oh, boy. You want to talk about heavy hitter?
Oh, yeah. The Day the Earth Stood Still. West Side Story.
Sound of Music, people. The
yes.
Sound of Music.
He directed The Sound of Music. Think about it. This guy, Robert Wise, he was a chameleon of directing movies. He could direct any genre.
Was this his first science fiction film?
No, because obviously he did The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, yeah, that's right. My
and
bad.
he did The Andromeda Strain, which was based on a Michael Crichton book earlier in the 70s, because I believe that might have been Michael Crichton's first book, The Andromeda Strain. Actually, it just got a cool special edition Blu-ray from Arrow Video, by the way.
I gotta check that out. But he wasn't the only one who was hosting, because another big movie was coming out in 1978.
Oh, I know what it would have been. Would it have been Airport 78?
It would be Airport 70. Actually, it would have been Airport 77. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And who made their career in the airport movies? Not George Kennedy.
No.
Although he did make his career in the airport movies.
Yeah. The airport series of movies made George Kennedy's career just like Wings made Tony Shalhoub's career.
No, we're talking about Karen Black.
There's no one who can land this plane.
I can.
Thank God! It's Karen Black! She landed a busted plane in Airport 75? It was a movie in the 70s. Ah, you damn kids with your music.
Everything about this sort of ceremony was very sort of Moog synthesizer futuristic.
Yeah, because that was the thing in the 1970s.
Yeah. And of course, because this is the Academy of Science Fiction, Horror, and Fantasy, they have to talk about science fiction, horror, and fantasy. And one of the first cuts in the whole thing was to a man who would actually win the Best Film Actor Award, George Burns from Oh God, as God.
Oh, wow, that must have been really powerful acting to
hey,
win the...
Wait. No, don't make fun of that movie. That's one of my favorite movies as a younger
kid. Oh, I'm not denying that. I'm not... George Burns is great in Oh God.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, we can't forget Oh God, You Devil, the sequel.
I like to forget Oh God, You Devil, if I'm being completely honest.
Hey, he's playing Oh God and the Devil.
Yes.
That's what makes it funny. He is both God and the devil.
And one of the first presenters of the awards is the president of the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror, Dr. Donald Reap, who, if I'm being completely honest, looks like the goalie from the Mighty Ducks Game Changers.
He does look like the goalie from the... I hate to plug another thing I'm doing for the Flesby Nation Pop Experience reviewing Mighty Ducks Game Changers, but yeah, he does exactly look like that goalie.
X.
What are you doing?
In my video game, X is kick save.
Oh, not in real life.
And then we have a quick cut to Brenda Vaccaro.
Who that be?
Brenda Vaccaro, you know. Brenda Vaccaro. You don't know who Brenda Vaccaro is? She's a freaking legend! Come on!
Well, again, I've heard her called Brenda Vaccaro.
Brenda Vaccaro, sorry.
Yeah, you and your pronunciation the last couple weeks.
Yeah, me and my pronunciations, whatever. Your first presenter here is a guy who knows how to wield a lightsaber.
His name's Mark Hamill.
Yes. By the way, not only does he know how to wield a lightsaber, he also knows how to voice the Joker.
Oh, yes. It won't be for another, 15 years, but still.
But, yeah, not many people are legends twice.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, we'll also be talking about Mark Hamill in future installment, the 1990 adaptation of The Flash.
Oh, and also we should mention Brenda Vaccaro. She starred with Karen Black in Airport 77.
Okay, that explains it.
And who is this guy with Mark Hamill from the original Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers? The one and only Buster Crabbe.
Buster Crabbe! What a name! Buster Crabbe!
What a name! What a career this guy's had! He is amazing!
Oh my god.
And the two were there to present the award for Best Special Effects in film. And of course, if I'm not mistaken, that award went to... Are you ready for this?
Okay. What is it?
John Dykstra and John Steers from Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. There's no contest.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better than that in 1977.
No.
I'm sorry. It's like, all you people who are thinking about Sinbad in the Eye of the Tiger, no! Star Wars!
Yeah, Star Wars. Nobody cares about... I'm sorry, Ray Harryhausen. Nobody cares about these special effects. I know you're doing it on stop motion with clay, but seriously, these special effects on Star Wars blow it away.
And then you have our next two presenters.
Oh, yes! This is great!
Are you ready for this?
Oh, my God.
From Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Melinda Dillon, a.k.a. Ralphie's mom from A Christmas Story, and from your nightmares in 1977, 1980, and 1983.
And I guess 2005.
And I guess 2005, sure, why not?
And in 2016 with Rogue One. And soon to be in your nightmares again, with the upcoming Disney Plus series about Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Darth Vader.
Yes. And the weird...
And you know what? Give all the credit in the world. He played up that role.
Oh, this guy, whoever it is in the Darth Vader suit.
It is David Prowse. But I'm pretty sure that's not James Earl Jones.
No, it's definitely not James Earl Jones' voice.
No.
I never imagined that I could have a close encounter with you, Lord Vader.
It is unlikely that you ever will again. Oh. Unless you are unfortunate enough to be found on the Death Star.
Well, if I am, I'll try to have the Force with me.
I am a bit late for my next battle, so if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind.
And the Best Supporting Actress Award went to Susan Terrell, by the way.
Who that be?
Some lady. She played Mary Aiken in Bad. Aside from that, I don't know who she is. but she was nominated for an Oscar for her performance as Oma in Fat City in 1972. And she played Midge Montana in Big Top Pee Wee.
Oh, wow.
And she was in more than one episode, let's say, of Starsky and Hutch.
Oh, yeah. But sadly, no longer with us. She passed away back in June of 2012.
And we're not done yet, because we have the Best Supporting Actor. And, of course, the winner was Alec Guinness.
Oh, wow. What a shocker.
I know. And our next award is being presented by Stan Freberg, who we last saw. Hold on.
It's not an award presentation. It's like a skit.
Well, that would explain why he looks like John C. Reilly from Steve Brule.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my gosh. Really?
Yeah. I mean, am I the only one who thought of that?
No. Now that you mention it, it's now in my head that he's Steve Brule.
Yeah, Stan Freberg. I'm guessing that's where John C. Reilly.
I'm sorry. He does look like Steve Brule. Oh my gosh.
Hey, guys. We didn't even mention. But you know what? Stan Freberg was on Match Game Hollywood Squares. So there you go. There's your reference to Match Game Hollywood Squares.
Yep.
You're doing the Lord's work, my friend.
And also, he's doing this bit with this puppet that comes out of a UFO.
I know they're trying to go for a whole Muppets vibe, but no.
And you can clearly see Stan's turn his back to the camera. He's at least trying to keep the kayfabe alive, unlike someone who we'll get to much later in the special.
Indeed he is.
Oh my gosh, it's like Steve Brule with Kermit the Frog.
Yeah.
Yep. And our next set of presenters, Piper Laurie and Christopher Lee. Of course, Christopher Lee, sadly, no longer with us, but you would remember him as Count Dooku in the Star Wars prequels.
And, of course, Lord of the Rings.
And, of course, Lord of the Rings.
And many Hammer horror films.
Yep. Piper Laurie.
Oh, yes. Hold up, guys.
Greg's about to say something.
Yes. Get ready. Piper Laurie, of course, was Catherine Martell in Twin Peaks.
There it is.
I knew there was a Twin Peaks reference coming.
So you have both Greg and mine sort of wings here. Piper Laurie from Twin Peaks, Christopher Lee from Star Wars.
Star Wars is your wings?
Star Wars is my wings. Oh. Star Wars is my science fiction movie wings.
Okay. What's the award they were presenting?
That would be Best Makeup.
Oh, Best Makeup. It was won by Rick Baker!
And Stuart Freeborn.
Stuart Freeborn, yes.
They must not have had a Westmore nominated that year.
No. But you know what? Mm-hmm. Of course, Rick Baker probably would have won that award because I think he was basically responsible for Chewbacca's makeup.
Yep. He was basically your hair. You're laughing up now, fuzzball guy.
Yeah. And of course, Rick Baker, one of the most legendary makeup men in the business.
We have Best Costume now.
But we don't know who won Best Costume, I think.
Yes, we do.
Oh,
John Bolo of Star Wars.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Star Wars is going to win like almost every award.
Star Wars was nominated. I'm going to tell you right now. Star Wars was nominated for 16 Saturn Awards. It won 12. So, yeah, spoiler alert. Star Wars does well for itself.
Yeah. Okay, now we get into part four, where we have this bit with famed sci-fi author Ray Bradbury with this robot.
That looks like the prototype of Julie Newmar in My Living Doll.
Oh, and by the way...
By the way, we will be covering My Living Doll later.
Oh, by the way, for you kids that don't know who Ray Bradbury is,
guys...
Rachel Bloom of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend made a song about Ray Bradbury.
By the way, it should be mentioned that Ray Bradbury was promised a girl robot. You know what they got?
A boy robot.
No, they got the prototype to Julie Newmar in My Living Doll.
Oh, that's right.
And what were they presenting? Best director. It was a tie.
What?
It was a tie.
It was a tie?
It was a tie.
Who was the tie?
George Lucas for Star Wars. And okay. Steven Spielberg for Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Really? Is this a surprise?
I don't know how many voters they have. It must have been a really rigged vote if they had to exactly tie the vote.
Well, yet, like, an award is never tied before.
It's very rare in the Oscars you have a tie. I think there's only been, like, I think maybe two or three ties in the history of the Oscars. Because I think the year Barbara Streisand won her Oscar, she tied with somebody. Part 5. Oh, we got Karen in this black dress. Oh, and she's introducing our next presenter.
Yes.
Our next presenter. He's had experience with some damn dirty apes.
Yep.
Charlton Heston.
Get your paws off me, damn dirty ape.
Too bad this isn't 2021, because if he were doing this today, he'd probably be presenting this award with Dana Gould as Dr. Zaius.
Charlton Heston, also big in the airport movies.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Who wasn't in those airport movies back in the day?
And what was he doing? He was doing Best Actress.
Yes.
And the winner, of course, was Jodie Foster for The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane.
Oh, by the way, guys, this is the second time we've brought up Jodie Foster in this podcast, because remember, Chico, she was in The Paul Lynde Show as on its guest star.
She was.
Yes.
Now she's a Hollywood big shot.
Yeah. Oh, and now we got Best Actor. And we already said who won it.
George Burns as God.
As God. I mean, come on, it's no contest.
By the way, nice of Jodie to be classy and pre-record her acceptance speech.
Yeah, Alec Guinness didn't even bother with an acceptance speech to tape.
It's nice to know that Jodie Foster had the goal in mind to be this big actress so far, as she has her own green screen. Am I right?
Yeah. Too bad YouTube didn't exist back in 1978. Could you imagine the Jodie Foster how-tos?
Oh, God. She's probably out there recording a how-to for something already.
Yeah. There's a joke here, but I'm not going to say it.
No, you must not.
No. But next, we have... Oh, I think we got Quincy Jones and John Williams in this part 6.
Oh, yeah. Quincy Jones and John Williams, two music gods.
That's right. And Quincy gives John Williams an award for his work on Star Wars. And let's be honest, one of the great film scores of all time is John Williams in Star Wars. And let's be honest, it's no contest. They probably were like, you know what? These other movies, yeah, we're not even going to care. We got to give this award to John Williams.
Yep, we're going to. And by the way, if any of y'all don't know who Quincy Jones is, first of all, why are you even listening to this?
Yeah.
And second of all, he's Rashida Jones's daddy.
Yes. And by the way, you all know that Rashida Jones' mother was Peggy Lipton.
And of Peggy, the Mod Squad, yes.
Of the Mod Squad. And Peggy Lipton was on Twin Peaks. But okay, guys, right. Guys.
Uh-huh.
It is time for the main event.
Oh, are we ready to do this?
We're ready.
Are we ready? We're not ready, are we?
Well, we're going to be.
It's like, if you're not ready, you better get ready.
Mike, are you ready?
This is the moment I've been waiting for.
This is the moment we've been waiting a long, long time for.
The reason why we're covering this award show in the first place.
Oh, yeah. So, Karen Black introduces Bernie Taupin, Elton John's longtime collaborator.
Bet you didn't know that about him.
Yeah.
Bernie Taupin introducing William Shatner performing one of his all-time greatest songs in the history of everything ever.
Rocket.
Are you ready for this?
Yes. Here we go. We're playing the clip.
Here it is. William Shatner. Rocket Man.
She packed my bags. Last night, pre-flight. 0 hour. 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high.
The look on his face right now.
Oh, yeah.
As a kite by then.
He's just taking his smoke of his sweet-ass cigarette.
Just taking drag after drag.
I miss the earth so much. I miss my wife.
Look at that smoke coming out of that cigarette.
Oh, like it's like he has, he gives no apps.
On such a...
He gives absolutely no apps here.
And I think it's going to be a long, long time. The touchdown brings me back again to find out.
The man I think I am at all.
Back home.
Oh, no. No, I'm a rocket man.
Rocket man.
Rocket man.
Burning out his fumes out here.
Alone.
And that, what?
I think it's gonna be
what is
a
this?
Long time.
More green screen action, folks.
There's another William Shatner?
I'm a
rocket man.
And they're doing quick cuts of his green screen.
Yeah. And then you have a disembodied head of Shatner.
Mars ain't the kind of place to raise a kid.
Mars.
In fact, it's cold as hell.
It's cold as hell.
You don't want any of that.
And there's
no one there to raise him.
If you did. And all this science, I don't understand.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Never Shatner's like,
just go smoke this here cigarette, man.
Yeah. He's observing, like,
he's basically musing on himself.
A rocket.
Which, you know, you totally get, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a long time.
Touchdown brings me
again
again
to
find. I'm not the man.
I think I am at all. Oh no.
I'm a rocket man. And he's about to cry, guys. I swear to God, he's about to cry.
Hello.
Wait, we're not done.
Hold on, what?
We're not done.
Oh my God.
Three Shatners,
and this one looks drunk as hell. And right now, you can't see this, but Mike is holding up his Stewie doll because this is where Seth MacFarlane got the joke.
He's out here alone.
If it is, it's gonna be
a long, long time. And I think
it's gonna
be
a long, long time. And then
it's gonna be
here we go.
A long time. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time.
That was worth y'all. William Shatner, y'all.
That is so amazing.
That is worth the price of admission alone, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my God. this is one of the greatest pieces of television that has ever been put together.
Yeah.
Mike, that brings a tear to your eye, doesn't it?
It's absolutely iconic, and it's only gotten better with age.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It just adds to the legend of William Shatner.
And yes, thanks to my buddy Stewie here for doing that. What it was like first or second season of Family Guy, so like 20, 21, 22 years ago.
Oh, yeah, that's very early Family Guy.
Oh, yes. That was before it came back.
That was so old, it was like nobody understood the joke.
Nobody understood the reference, but this was like way before the days of YouTube, where you were just, okay, we're just going to circulate the tapes until things happen. Now, you get it.
Now everybody gets the reference, you're right.
And this has been another installment of, now you get it.
Yeah, that was like fighting the Frizzies level in South Park, obscure.
Yeah, and you know what else is obscure?
What?
Quark.
Okay.
Because the series lead, by the way, you remember him from the original Westworld movie.
Oh, Richard Benjamin!
Yes, Richard Benjamin. He and Paula Prentice
his are wife. Presenting
his wife, yes. And they just had a child, and the child doesn't have a job yet, so...
Oh, well...
I'm quoting Karen Black now. But there you go. Richard Benjamin and Paula Prentice were married in the 70s. And they are presenting the next award, which is like Best Fantasy Film. And that would go, of course, to Oh God.
Oh God. It won Best Fantasy Film.
Oh God was a good movie. That made John Denver's acting career.
Well, yeah, it would be a fantasy movie because it certainly isn't. It isn't nonfiction.
No.
Or at least I hope not.
And after, like, how do you follow William Shatner? Just how? A salute to Lon Chaney by quick change artist Michael McGivney.
Oh, hold on a second. Lon Chaney? You said
Lon Chaney. Yes, Lon Chaney.
Well, you know who had a thing for Lon Chaney.
Who had a thing for Lon Chaney?
I was Lon Chaney's lover.
Go back and love him.
From Jackass the movie. I was Lon Chaney's lover.
No. Yeah, I didn't need to see that.
That's one of my brother's favorite scenes from Jackass the movie. We quote it every time, once a year. I was Lon Chaney's lover.
Okay.
Yeah, this is like a what the F sequence.
But it was a really good what the F sequence.
It was.
So now let's go to the best horror film as presented by Wolfman Jack and Wayland Flowers and Madam, who is dressed, by the way, as the Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Wolfman Jack, of course, was in American Graffiti, which was directed by George Lucas. And for you youngins who don't know about Wolfman Jack, one of the most legendary radio personalities of all time.
Yes. Perhaps one of the best broadcasters of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
One of the best voices by far.
Yeah.
Everybody recognizes this sad voice.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, the award itself would go to The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane, which is weird because I've never heard of that movie until I've done research for this episode.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even know about this movie that it even existed. Oh, and by the way, remember how I said about how at least Stan Freberg was trying to keep the kayfabe with the puppet by having his back turned?
Uh-huh.
Wayland Flowers is not even trying.
Nope.
No, not at all.
He's like, I got the check already cleared.
Yeah. Here we go. Part 9, folks. We're getting into the big award of the night. The best film of the science fiction. And who do we have presenting this award?
Well, I believe we have two people who walked on the moon. We have Charles Gordon and somebody a little more familiar, Buzz Aldrin.
Yes, we have two people famous for walking on the freaking moon.
Yeah, that science fiction stuff sounds pretty wild. Can you imagine if people could actually travel through space in ships? Why, if they could do that, maybe they could get me off the fucking moon!
And if you watch this, they get like a minute standing ovation.
Oh, yeah.
And deservedly so, mind you, but they get a long standing O.
They walked on the moon.
They walked on the freaking moon, people.
Okay, so Chico, do you want to read the nominees for Best Science Fiction Film?
I would like to read the nominees for Best Science Fiction Film.
Okay.
They are Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Demon Seed, The Island of Dr. Moreau, Star Wars, and Twilight's Last Gleaming.
Boy, I wonder which movie won.
Clearly, Demon Seed won.
That was Star Wars.
It was indeed. By the way, is that Charlie O'Donnell I hear announcing?
Yes, it is Charlie O'Donnell announcing.
He would be working at Channel 13 at the time, if I'm not mistaken, because I was doing a deep dive into old news opens. Charlie O'Donnell did the news for Channel 13 in Los Angeles.
Yeah, he did. He did. Oh, and accepting the award for Star Wars, producer Gary Kurtz. And I gotta say, producer Gary Kurtz of Star Wars, tell me he does not look like Abraham Lincoln with that beard.
He absolutely does look like Abraham Lincoln, yes. But going back to Charlie O'Donnell, wouldn't he have been doing Wheel of Fortune at the time? 78? I think he was.
Yeah, I think he might have been, because isn't some of the episodes we've seen on the trading circuit, he has voiced over for Wheel?
Yes. I believe he did the 76 episode that's out there, and I believe he did the 80, so I don't see why he wouldn't have done 78.
He probably would have been replaced for a bit by Jack Clark.
Yeah.
Until he came back when, unfortunately, Jack Clark passed away. But of course, we now get into the part 10, where we have Shatner and Karen Black previewing some of the big upcoming movies of 1978.
Ooh. And what's coming up in 1978? I love to see Bill and Karen.
Oh, we got the epic movie Meteor with Sean Connery.
The Incredible Melting Man?
Incredible Melting Man! Oh, we have the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Donald Sutherland and Leonard Nimoy.
Star Crash, whatever that is.
Yeah, whatever that is. Oh, the movie Capricorn 1.
Huh. Oh, that made O.J. Simpson's career.
And really, probably the best movie of them all, I don't even see there. The best movie from 78, I should say.
What's that?
Halloween.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah. Dun, 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 I guess they didn't think much of it.
Oh, yeah. No one thought about that. No one thought Tony Curtis's daughter would carry a movie. Oh, hold up, Mike. I mentioned Tony Curtis. Hold up.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You son of a bitch.
Well, hold on, because this is staying in. This is staying in, folks. Hold on.
Is that Clash of the Titans?
Might be.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Hi.
Here we go.
The Swarm. Which is like the bees scene from The Wicker Man. Stretched out 2 hours.
Not the bees! Ah! I love Not the Bees.
The 1978 Science Fiction Film Awards. Why didn't they mention my daughter's movie in the preview of 1978's film?
Oh, boy.
Next on Hollywood Babylon.
They did not mention Halloween, though.
This stupid theme from Halloween Babylon goes on for like 3 minutes.
That is just crazy.
Tony Curtis. Tonight on Hollywood Babylon, we're going to be talking about William Shatner. Why is he there's three different people? Are they split personalities? We'll find out tonight on Hollywood Babylon.
I'm telling you, guys.
Eventually, we're going to do a Hollywood Babylon episode. Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
We are dead.
Oh, boy.
I thought Shatner's Rocketman would kill us. Oh, no.
It was stupid Hollywood Babylon. Tony Curtis complaining about his daughter's movie not in that preview montage. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, one thing I forgot to mention. Who co-produced this special?
Oh, yes, yes.
Scott Sternberg and Arnold Shapiro. Scott Sternberg, of course, the legendary game show producers, and Arnold Shapiro, who produced
a couple seasons of Big Brother
and like Rescue 911 and Rescue 911.
Yes, and of course, as we all know, Rescue 911. William Shatner was on it as the host.
Yes.
Yeah, he was.
You know what the selling point was?
What?
His performance of Rocket Man.
Oh, that's probably what sold Arnold Shapiro on casting him as the host. Like,
yes.
He knows how to be serious. But, oh, let's not forget, Rescue 911 had a pinball machine. And we'll be covering that in June on It Had a Pinball Machine.
The second mention of that show this week.
Yeah. Well, what do we have to say about the 1978 Science Fiction Film Awards?
It was a thing out there on TV.
Yeah, you damn right it was.
Oh, God, was it a thing on TV? Too bad the Saturn Awards aren't broadcast on television anymore. Can you imagine the sort of moments that you can create with this sort of pop culture event? It could be another Comic-Con coverage.
Oh, yeah. You could have all the television networks there covering it. You could have all the YouTube channels, all the big YouTube channels like IGN and the like covering it. It'd be amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, you could definitely do that.
But alas, it is not to be.
Yeah.
Shame, really.
It is.
Let's do some shopping, shall we?
Oh, crap. What did you find, Chico?
This is... Are you ready for this?
What is it?
A Science Fiction Film Awards, a 6th annual program guide provided by KTLA Los Angeles.
Oh, that's terrific.
6th annual? So this would have been 79? Or
78. 70. It's a late 78, early 79.
Okay, so this would have been the year after... The Shatner Singing Awards.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll tell you right now, 6th Annual Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Film Awards. From KTLA Studios.
And it's just a program.
It's just a program, yes. Right. It's not even a program. Yeah, it is the program. I'm sorry.
Okay. Who's starting first?
You know what, Greg? You got an honest face. You go first.
All right. I'm going to go $50.
Mike?
I got to do it. I got to $1 him. $1.
Ugh. And you both overbid.
I said $1. How did I overbid?
I thought you said 51. I'm sorry.
No, no. I meant $1.
Okay.
So I wonder what's going to happen, huh?
Sadly, not the first time I've ever made that mistake. Okay. The actual price for this Science Fiction Film Awards program, $29.99.
Oh.
Still too much, in my opinion, but okay.
I was going to say 40. I would have been at least $10 off.
Yeah. And apparently they're billing it as a very rare and such a great piece of history for anybody.
Really?
And the seller is apparently self-billed as the number one pop culture convention in Los Angeles since 1979.
Hey, I got a question. If Jamie Lee Curtis was at the awards, do you think Tony would have presented an award at the 1979 Science Fiction Film Awards? Mike, do you have any idea how that would go?
That would be very awkward.
I have no idea.
You know how it would go? I'm Tony Curtis. I'm here to present an award at the 1979 Science Fiction Film Awards. Last year, William Shatner was singing a duet. What do you call a trio or something? I don't even know what the term is for three people singing. Yeah, there's three biggest personalities of himself singing. I'm Tony Curtis.
Oh, God.
We've lost it.
Now that this has gone completely off the rails, it has.
Wait. You said we lost it. That sort of implies that at one point we had it.
Oh, yeah, we did. You know.
But anyway, before we go ahead and end this monstrosity, we want to give a shout out to the folks at the Museum of Classic Chicago Television, fuzzymemories.tv, for making the entire ceremony, less the opening sequence, available to watch online.
Oh, yes. We always praise Fuzzy Memories. They do great work. And also, they're going to help us out in late July, early August, because there is a certain event in Chicago that we'll be covering this year on the podcast. That happened in the late 70s. And you guys...
Oh, yeah!
You know what we're talking about.
I do.
Yeah.
You might want to get your asbestos vests for this one, folks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You better run for the hills.
Yep. It's not just a moment in history, but also a momentous moment for baseball.
Yeah, it is.
Can't wait for that episode. I really can't. But in the meantime, you can listen to the rest of our episodes at itwasathingontv.com. We've got episodes. We've got mini-sodes. We've got live shows. We're actually doing something that's really cool, Greg. We're remastering some of the older episodes.
Oh, yes. Earlier this week, we had, this past Sunday, Auto Man and Manimal remastered. And let me just say, it was very fun to go back to that episode. Mike, was it fun to go back and re-listen to that episode again?
It's always fun talking about zippers.
Yeah. Zippers!
Yeah, and he's technically naked, and he's got, like, that Crest gel toothpaste color where his genitals should be.
Yeah.
How is that supposed to be sexy?
I don't know. People thought it was sexy in 1983.
Maybe they needed to brush their teeth. I have no idea.
He did. But you know what? I'll say this. I said it last week. I'm going to say it again. One day I will own that picture of Simon Bucor-Gadale and his Falcon. You know what? I bet you any money that at the 1983 or 84 Science Fiction Film Awards, I bet they had an in memoriam to Manimal.
Oh, that's just terrible.
And the Falcon was there too.
Falcon was there.
The Falcon was.
Did they bury him with the Falcon?
Yeah, you know, the Falcon was there showing his respects.
Hey, press.
Press F to pay respects.
Oh no, Greg couldn't even get that out.
Why am I laughing at the Call of Duty joke?
Press F as in Falcon to pay your respects.
Oh, jeez. Oh, Okay, you know what? I think we plumbed dry this whole ordeal. So
did.
So what's coming up next week? Next week we're getting back into pilot month because we are in the middle of pilot month. And what pilots do we have coming down the pike?
Okay, first we have a pilot of a remake, a serious remake of a classic television series.
Oh, and I this is another show I lasted about 3 minutes, and I'm like, nope, I'm sorry, this is too ridiculous.
And all I could say is Brian Fuller is involved, and we know how morbid his mind is.
And it's not from that long ago.
Nope.
No.
And the second one was actually a TV movie that spun off an unsold pilot.
All right, guys. Are you ready for this? Imagine, if you will, in October of 1983, Michael J. Fox, Nancy McKeon, Crispin Glover, Crystal Bernard, Todd Bridges, Dana Plato, Bob Denver, Dwayne Hickman, Lori Handler, Ken Osmond, Lumpy, and America's ass, Tom Ballard, all in the same movie.
What?
Well, it happened. And we're going to cover that next week right here on It Was a Thing on TV. Thanks for listening. Row!
Here's a message I think appropriate for a man being honored for his life achievement. And now the end is near. And so you face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear. I'll state your case, of which I'm certain. You lived a life that's full. You've traveled each and every shoreway. And more, much, much more than this. You did it your way. Regrets. You've had a few. Anyone see Howard the Duck? No, the Sith picture, I love the Sith picture. It's a great Sith picture. But then again, too few to mention. You did what you had to do and saw it through without exception. You planned each charted course, each careful step through every doorway, but more, much more than this, you did it your way. Oh, yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when you bit off more than you could chew, Baca. Shut up. But through it all, when there was doubt, you ate it up and spit it out. You faced it all. You stood tall. And you did it your way. But what is a man? What has he got? Not himself. Then he has not. I'm doing it my way. To say the things he truly feels, and not the words of one who kneels. The record shows you took the blows and you did it. Your way. Live long and prosper, George. Well, live long. You've already prospered enough. Thank you, George.